welcome to the AquariumMax audio show with Russ and Kelly. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics.
This is episode 78, recorded September 5th, 2011.
Okay, howdy everyone.
Happy Labor Day.
For those of you who have Labor Day.
Yeah, well, I guess not everybody does.
And I guess this is going to be released on Wednesday anyway, so it'll be too late.
So happy belated Labor Day. Unless you don't live in this country, and then I hope you had a fabulous Monday at work. How about that? Does that cover everything?
That covers everybody. Okay, what have we got first?
We have a new video.
We do indeed. A video of fairy shrimp.
Yay!
Our own fairy shrimp, Streptocephalus coeli. Scientific name.
That makes me cough, apparently. Yeah.
Apparently so.
I'm allergic to Latin.
We talked about him last week, and now we have a video up, so check it out if you'd like to. It's on YouTube.
Very cute.
We'll have it on Facebook by the time you listen to this. And probably on the resources page as well. So there you go. Next! What's next?
Next. You guys remember we were having a Daphnia contest. We were going to give a packet of Daphnia eggs to the first person to contact us and reference the contest. And that person was
Phil in Minnesota. So we thought we'd give the instructions for hatching on the air, because Phil probably already knows this. He's kept Daphnia before. But there'd be many of you out there, probably, who would like to know how to hatch Daphnia.
So we thought we would fill you all in.
No pun intended. Okay.
Oh, yeah, actually, I didn't do that.
That's why I said that. Okay. So, Phil, and everyone else who's interested in Daphnia hatching, I have hatched quite a few creatures, vernal pool-style creatures, that have eggs that are in a diapause state like these.
Diapause meaning?
Diapause meaning a state at which cellular activity is extremely reduced and or halted to the point where something can stay dormant for a long time until the proper cues arrive.
So it's like sci-fi cryo-sleep or something?
Yeah, like the Daphnia, the brine shrimp eggs in my freezer, they're in diapause.
Okay.
When I pull them out and put them in salt water, they awaken from diapause. Right. And Daphnia eggs are very similar in many ways, and so are fairy shrimp eggs and clam shrimp eggs and lots of others. So we're going to talk about that a bit and how that works. How to do it, how to hatch them most effectively. I've noticed, first of all, that it is best, this is not my invention or discovery, but water with low dissolved solids usually works because it mimics the rainwater that most of these bodies of water that these organisms inhabit, it mimics that water.
These dry eggs are sitting there, and then it rains on them, and they're effectively sitting in a puddle, and that's what makes them hatches.
Right. So water with
hatch.
Yes. So water with low dissolved solids is best.
Distilled
water is great. Yeah. RO water is great. Rainwater, if you can get it, and you can get it clean.
What do you mean get it clean?
Well, if you live in a place where there's a lot of air pollution and it rains, you'll get dirty water, dirty rainwater.
If you live out in the country
and so
you catch it in a clean bucket.
Yeah, that kind of thing. You could use it. Some people do. But distilled water works fine. It's cheap. You can get it easily. So there you go. Now, it's also important to use a small volume of water initially when you're hatching them. It tends to work better.
No. Why is that? Because it's not like the eggs are going to go, oh, there's 6 inches of water above me instead of 2. I'm going to refuse to hatch.
Right. It's not so much a hatching cue, but it's a survival post-hatching. Because food density is important when they're small creatures, especially when they're very small. And if they don't have enough food density, they can die. But if you add the appropriate amount of food for a certain number of Daphnia to a 10-gallon tank, it can get spread out too thinly. If you add that same appropriate amount of food to, say, half a quart to a quart to maybe half a gallon of water,
they don't have to travel so far to find food.
Right. Okay. And so they tend to survive better. So it's nice to use a small container. It's also important to be careful not to disturb the eggs once you put them in. You put the detritus and the eggs in. You pour the distilled water over them. You expose them to some bright light. Sunlight works great if you can put them in a spot where they get a limited amount of sunlight, maybe in the morning. That's what I like to do if it's possible. Or you can use fluorescent light or whatever, as long as you have some kind of light that is bright enough to act as a trigger. It's good not to disturb the container because the eggs float up at the surface and they kind of end up in the meniscus right along the border of the water where it touches the container. And as water evaporates, they can get stuck up there and dry off again, which doesn't necessarily kill them, but it does prevent them from hatching. So if you jar the jar, they can end up stuck there and dry off. So to avoid that, just try not to jar the jar, and also add a little bit of water at a time, maybe just a quarter of an inch of water every day while
they're hatching. To make up for that evaporation.
Right. And if you wait about 5 days or so, they should hatch. Daphnia take longer than a lot of creatures do. So I wouldn't
like
give up.
The fairy shrimp and the triops often will go overnight, and then
right.
they'll be hatched.
Right, but Daphnia not so much. Maybe about 5 days.
So don't give up.
Right. And good luck, Phil, with those. Let us know how they do.
Okay, we've heard from Brian next. And you guys remember we were talking about the do-it-yourself method of replacing your filter cartridges, where you go to the fabric store and get the quilt batting.
Yep, the low-loft polyester bonded filter batting, chemical-free, that stuff.
That stuff, yeah.
Yes.
And so Brian, we had described it, but Brian was hoping for a visual description.
Yeah, I don't even think I described it very thoroughly.
Oh,
just
didn't
mentioned
you?
That I did it. No. Mm-hmm. So what I did is on Facebook, in response to Brian's question, I put a link to the photo bucket series that the originator of this particular permutation of filter wrapping came from. And there are a couple of different styles on the photo bucket, and it's kind of in
a
unique
order. For various
different
brands of filters.
Right. So it has the Marineland style cartridge, and there's some for the top fin or Tetra style filter, which is what I usually... Well, I use it for both. But so it's different how you do that because the filter cartridges are different. But if you check that out, that ought to explain it. They have a blow-by-blow method for doing that. And we also...
We filmed ourselves doing it, so we'll get that edited and put up on... page two.
Right, but in the meantime, the originator of that particular style has got it up there, so you can check that out. I just didn't want to say, oh, it was me, I came up with this, because I didn't really
I
come
know,
up
but
with...
you're so funny, because you always say, I'm not going to take credit for this, but really what happens, folks, is that he finds an idea, and he says, oh, that's a good idea, and he tries it, and he says, you know what, this would be an even better idea if I did it like this, and oh, I'm going to change it over here, too, and do it like this, and then I'm going to change it like this, and then it's really your own idea, so go ahead and take credit for it.
Well, perhaps not in this case, though. But, you know, many Aquarius are tinkerers at heart. That's a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
It helps us improve upon things, and that's good. All right, well... Hopefully that'll help, Brian, and thank you for mentioning that.
Okay, we have had an email from John I.
Yeah.
Location unknown, unspecified. He's on Mission Impossible. He can't tell us where he is. I don't know.
But no, he was just on Facebook, so he oh. doesn't usually
oh,
tell you.
Oh, is that what it was?
Yeah. But he's a
well,
new
that's
contributor.
Much less exciting.
So thank you, John, for joining us
okay.
as a new contributor.
And his comment says, I was wondering if you would be able to do a podcast about some smaller size 20-gallon saltwater tanks. I am currently setting one up and still looking at inhabitants. Great show.
Well, we're glad you enjoy the show, and that is a great topic. I have we have some experience with saltwater, probably about 5 years' worth, but with much smaller tanks in general.
Wee little nano tanks.
We started out with a 2.5, and then we went all the way up to a 5, and then finally we went up to a 10. And... So we don't have a lot of experience with anything bigger than that, saltwater-wise. So I would like to get the opinion of someone else to help us with this. Maybe, I don't know, Brian, what do you think? Don't mean to put you on the spot, no pressure, but...
Pressure, there's pressure.
No pressure.
Pressure!
You've kept a saltwater reef tank, a 20-gallon, for some years now. So perhaps, if you wouldn't mind, we could do an interview with you on that sometime. You know, if you're interested. If not, don't worry.
Oh, come on. You know you are. You know you want to. Just call us.
Well, let's hope so. But we'll see. And other aquarists who have done, you know, saltwater 20 gallons, that would be great. Because I would like to help John out, but having done a 20-gallon, I don't know that I should say a whole lot about it.
This is us being modest again, because I'm pretty sure if he wanted to, he could say things about it. But... Now he's blushing. You can't see it, but he is.
Okay.
Okay, sorry. I'll stop making you blush.
No, that's okay.
Okay, we heard from Julia in Paris again.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, she's had some problems with her cherry shrimp.
Yeah, she said that she went to buy some nice, rich, red cherry shrimp from the place she originally got her shrimp from because she had been giving them away and so on, and so she needed to...
She still has some.
Yeah, she still has some. And they're doing fine. But she wanted to add these other ones to the tank, and the problem is... and they've been doing well for over a year, and she got these really deep red ones, and she introduced them very carefully using the drip method, where you just, you know, drip usually using some airline that has either a valve on it or a knot in it, a loose mm-hmm. knot in it. Slowly drip water from the tank into the bag so they get used to the water. But she said the new ones died a few days later.
Mm.
And then she tried again, and exactly the same thing happened. All the original shrimp are doing fine.
Hmm.
And she said a friend who got some at the same store has kept his alive, so she's wondering what she's doing. And I emailed her about that and was wondering what was going on, if they had put something for the shrimp to attach to when they were in the bag so they didn't stress out on the way home, although that's usually something that occurs over a long period of time, like shipping. If you ship a bunch of shrimp in a bare bag, that can stress them out. But if you put some gel
moss in
there...
Is that kind of like you take a human and just let us float without any center of gravity for too long, we'll just... be unhappy.
Kind of like that, yeah. They can get stressed if they're not holding on to something.
They got to have a teddy bear.
Right. So you give them a comfort object, like a piece of Java moss or something. They do better. But that we didn't think that was a problem because they do put something in the bag with the shrimp from the store. And we also asked them, I asked Julia about the pH, if she knew the difference with the pH with her tank and the pH at the store. And her tap water... is right around 8, pH of 8.
And where for shrimp do you want it to be?
Well, cherry shrimp can do fine at 8, as long as they're acclimatized to it. But the problem is, we're wondering, is if this pet store had their shrimp in pH, a lower pH, which could cause a definite problem, and drip method for a couple of hours might not be enough.
Oh, what would you do?
What would you do?
Yeah, I mean, how would you get them used to that if the drip method... you know, is not going to be enough, what would you do?
Well, first of all, I just back up and say we need to find out what if the pH is different, because mm-hmm. there could be something else going on. That's the first thing that came to my mind, oh, maybe it's pH. So she did mention that they have put the shrimp on the other side of the store where they keep ram cichlids and so mm-hmm. on, which generally require, you know, water with a fairly low pH, soft acidic water. And... so they're probably in a mixture of RO and tap water. Maybe the pH could be in the high 6s, low 7s, somewhere around there. So
which would be quite a bit of difference.
Yeah, enough to cause some serious shock.
Okay, well, let's pause, and I'm going to mm-hmm. ask you the question, you know, because we'll go forward with what happened to Juliet, but just for knowledge's sake, if mm-hmm. that was the problem,
mm-hmm.
how should she get the how would you get the shrimp used to the different pH?
It's tricky. You have to do it very slowly.
Like, put them in a different container and what do you do?
You know, ideally, this would be the ideal situation, but highly impractical. Set up a tank with water from the store. Go get several gallons mm-hmm. of water from the store. And cycle...
out of their tanks.
Yeah, cycle the tank, and then bring the water, you know, do some water changes on this cycled tank, a small, you know, cycled tank, and then... try to get the pH to the exact same as that of the store. You could bring some of the water from the store, a good amount of it, and change some of the water in your tank with that water. That would help. But say you're using a 2.5-gallon tank, and you ask them for a couple of gallons of their water
mm-hmm.
along with your shrimp, and you could put some of that. You wouldn't change all the water out because you could shock the bacteria in your filter. But you could take a gallon out of the 2.5 and put a gallon of the water from the pet store in there, which could help. And then slowly use that to... use the drip method, but use more than... she said she did a couple of hours, which is usually more than ample if pH is pretty close. But in this case, it doesn't seem to be right. So mm-hmm. you maybe take 8 hours to do it. Do the drip method. But then you'd have to regularly take water out of the bag, partly so that waste products don't build up in the bag,
mm-hmm.
you know, and partly so the bag doesn't overflow. So you'd need to regularly go into that bag. Maybe use a turkey baster, draw water in any, you know, detritus or shrimp poop that ends up on the bottom, suck it out, so that you're not getting waste building up in there. Maybe put some Java moss in there, a good-sized clump of Java moss, so that it's mm-hmm. absorbing some of the, you know, ammonia and so on that may be developing there. If you're doing that for maybe 8 hours, that might help. Nope, it's time for the break.
This isn't a commercial, because it's not trying to sell you anything. It is, however, the part where we shamelessly encourage you to be a part of the Aquarimax audio show by calling and leaving a message any time of the day or night at 801-477-0629. If you don't want to actually talk, but you do have a comment or question, you can just send us an email to info@aquarimax.com. There. That wasn't so painful now, was it?
So, that would be one way to do it. But I think the drip method, if you did it over 8 hours, would probably work better. I know that some people... I once bought some betas from a breeder who said to do it over a period of 24 hours and just keep them in the bag and keep removing water from their bag, putting it in. I did that. She said, if you don't do this, they'll die. And so that's what I did.
That was for the betas?
For the betas.
Wow.
Yeah, I know most betas aren't that sensitive. And, you can go get them at the pet store. But the thing, when you get them at the pet store, they've been in water that's probably more similar to your water for a long time. And hers, not necessarily, because they were from across the country.
Right.
So.
Okay, so, no. Did that turn out to be the problem with Juliet's shrimp?
We're not entirely sure, but she's going to check with the pet store and see what their pH is, and that will give us something to work on. Because then if we know if there's a significant difference, that probably it was at least a strong contributing factor. And just make the pH change more gradual is the only thing, really.
So is that where we're at with that situation right now? We're waiting to hear from the pet store.
Yeah, okay. We're waiting. Because she wants to get some really red ones. She can go and get it from private breeders who have shrimp, but they're not as red.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe she should try that Pro Crisps color like Nick uses and see if it's an environmental thing rather than a genetic thing. I mean, I know that the color of red cherry shrimp is affected by both genetics and food, but it would be interesting to see what happens if she tries that Tetra Pro Crisps color food and see if that makes a difference. Now, she also asks if crystal red shrimp, which are a different type of shrimp, not to be confused with red cherry shrimp. They're a bit smaller, and instead of just being red, they're red with white stripes. And there are various permutations. I think we talked about it before, because Mick keeps them.
Okay.
She's asking if they tolerate high pH levels, or would they be a complete waste of time in Paris tap water, which is about 8, pH of 8. My understanding, I've read it several sources. I haven't kept crystal reds, but I've read it several sources that they prefer water with a lower pH than that.
Mm, so that wouldn't work so well.
But I would like to open that out. I mean, Mick keeps them. He keeps them in Carnforth, UK. I'm not sure what his pH is, but maybe he could give us some input on that. And anyone else who keeps crystal reds. But I've read in at least 2 sources and probably more that they tend not to do that well in high alkaline water with a high pH. So... hopefully, that's a short answer to the question, and hopefully we'll get some more. And one nice thing that I thought was great, that Juliet says that she's spreading Aquarimax around.
Oh, cool.
With different forums, to different forums in Europe that she's on. So she's helping us out. So
we're
very grateful for that. We appreciate that very much, and we hope that we can get this shrimp issue resolved.
Mm-hmm. Do we have anything else?
We do.
What do we got?
We have a couple things. One, we've got something from Andreka in Oregon. A couple of things. So why don't we start with that, this first one. You want to go ahead and fill us in on Andreka's first question?
Yeah, okay, this is what her message says. She says, we bought some aquarium wood from our local fish store. They said we didn't need to do anything, so we just rinsed it. Now the water is a sepia color. And she says, maybe from tannins? At least this seems to have reduced the pH. Is that possible? pH is still high. We got these peat pellets that I would put in a nylon. Could I use regular peat from the garden store instead?
Okay, lots of great questions. All right, let's start out with the aquarium wood. They said we didn't need to do anything, so we just rinsed it. Now the water is a sepia color from tannins, as she correctly surmises. Yes, there are tannins in a lot of aquarium woods, especially things like Malaysian driftwood, that are very popular in aquariums, but other types of wood have it in them too. And those are not necessarily harmful, but they certainly can reduce the pH and increase the acidity of the water. That does happen. One issue is, though, the tannins in the wood, they do stain the water, which makes you know, some fish are perfectly happy with that. It doesn't bother them at all. If they're, for example, rams or neon tetras or something, they're perfectly happy.
South American?
Yeah, if it's a fish that's from Blackwater, like neon tetras, they're perfectly happy in it. It does make it harder for plants to grow because that color in the water absorbs a lot of the light, or I don't know if it absorbs it technically or reflects it or whatever it does, but it makes it less available to the plant leaves. And, of course, a lot of people don't like that color.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like your fish are swimming around in tea. Why am I swimming in tea? So that's not necessarily a good thing. The good news is, with water changes, it will eventually dissipate completely. Like
it'll eventually all leach out, and
yeah, the tannins will leach out.
Anymore.
You won't see it anymore.
How long does that take? Does it just depend on the size and the piece of the wood and the size of the tank? And
yep, and whether or not it's been pre-treated or not, pre-soaked. There's a ton of different factors involved. You can pre-treat it in a different container if you like, and that'll be helpful. You can just put it in a large container that's clean and free of soap and detergent residue, of course, and just add water to it and then dump out that water every couple of days. And you do that for a couple of weeks. And usually by that time, you've dissipated the tannins significantly. I've done that before. It works. Or you can just put it in the tank and deal with it. It depends. You know, we've got a few small pieces of driftwood for this 55 here when we set it up. And I didn't bother rinsing them because I knew it was going to stain the water a little, but it wasn't going to be a big deal in a 55-gallon tank.
It didn't really make that big of a difference.
They were small pieces of driftwood,
yeah.
And it was a big tank. So it wasn't really a big deal. But when I put them in a 10-gallon, I usually do pre-treat them first. So, yeah, you pre-treat it, and it does indeed reduce the pH, as I think we mentioned. It will do that for a while, but once the tannins are leached out, it will stop doing that. So that's something to keep track of, because, of course, the worst things for fish are not so much different pHs than what they're used to, but the sudden changes. Because you can slowly adapt many, many species to a pH that is not quite in their ideal range that they're used to in the wild, or even what they're used to from the fish farm they came from or whatever. But you don't want the changes to be quick and drastic, or it could be dangerous. All right. She also mentions here that she's got some peat pellets that she's going to put in a nylon bag, a media bag. And peat pellets are essentially, in many ways, they serve the same function as the driftwood does, in that they will reduce, they will add tannins to the water. And when they do that, that reduces the pH. If there's enough of them.
Does it change the color as well?
It does, to some extent, although often less than the driftwood, just because, you know, there's a lot less volume there, so fewer tannins are being released. But peat also has this thing, it's an ion exchange medium, essentially. It will release certain ions that will increase the acidity of the water, but it will also collect calcium and magnesium type ions that, so it can soften the water. It's actually removing calcium and so on from the water. So that is a pretty effective way to do it, too. You just need to make sure that you're fairly consistent with the quantity and over time, so your pH isn't constantly going up and down. But if you put pH in a media bag and then after a while you replace it again so that it's consistently happening, it'll tend to keep the pH more stable than if you put some in there and it goes down and then you forget about it and it creeps back up and then it'll creep back down when you put it back in and so on. So as long as you're consistent with that, that can be an effective method to do that.
Okay, well, she wanted to also know, is it okay to use regular peat from the garden store instead?
Now, that is an excellent question. And I could give you a really short answer, but I'm not. I'm going to give you a longer one.
They're more fun.
Yes. Okay, two things about peat from the garden store. Number one, they sometimes have added fertilizers. So you can just imagine what kind of havoc that could wreak in an aquarium. Not to mention, you know, it could be cause toxicity issues with the fish, but it could also cause algae blooms and who knows what else, depending on what type of fertilizer and what proportions. So that's one reason against using peat from the garden center. The next one is that they sometimes put mold retardants in the peat. Scary stuff, too. Okay, when you put that in it, I mean, it already is a mold retardant in itself to some extent, but they, for garden center purposes, they often add it. And when they do that, you know, those could be really spell disaster for the fish. So I would advise heartily against using it. You might be okay if you can find some that is guaranteed not to have any additives of any kind. Probably be okay.
But it might not be worth the legwork to find out if it has it in it or not.
Right, and you can go up to someone in the garden center and say, excuse me, does this peat have mold retardants in it? And they'll look at you as if you had just said, pardon me, do you have any cheap yellow mustard? And they won't know what to tell you. So,
Or you'll get the guy who says, I don't know, so I'm going to make something up.
Yeah.
Or the person who thinks they know, but they really don't.
Right. So it's kind of dangerous. And there's something else, too. The peat from the garden center, typically, is not organized into pellets or pucks, and so it's much more messy to deal with. And, yeah, it can be hard to wet properly if it's too dry, and it can be really particulate and spread everywhere. And
make a big mess.
Make a big mess. Even if you put it in a media bag, sometimes the particles, they're really fine dust-like particles that'll escape from a media bag and so on. So that's the answer.
Yes, to make the long answer short, no.
Probably not. Not necessarily a good idea, although it's good to think about that kind of stuff, because sometimes you can use things from the garden center.
And then it's cheaper.
And save yourself time and effort, like, you know, getting a terracotta pot from the garden center is cheaper than getting a ceramic cave that's made just for aquaria, and
right.
It works just as well. All right, well, Andreka had another comment, question, slash something.
Oh, yes. She says they were getting ready to go on a trip out of town for a couple of days, and she didn't check on the filter that was hanging off the back of the tank to make sure it was level. And when they got back, the carpet was saturated and half the tank water was gone.
Ooh.
So she was wondering, what are some other common disasters to be aware of so that you can prevent them?
Hmm. Well, first of all, my condolences. That sounds like it was not any fun
a lovely
to have to
big
deal
mess.
With. Yeah. Not a good surprise to come home. Come to home sweet home and it's home wet carpet. So that's no fun. First of all, we did do a show on tank disasters a while ago that may apply. So if you go to episode 36, it's not on iTunes anymore. But you can
go
to...
get it from the website.
Yeah, but even if you just Google Aquarimax disasters, Aquarimax space disasters, the show will pop right up.
Mm-hmm.
We checked that right before we did this. So it does work. And you could see some of the important disasters to try to avoid there. And then if there are any others, you know, that you can think of, those of you who have experienced an aquarium disaster of one sort or another.
Send us your worst fish story. Ha ha.
Yeah, there you go.
Your fish disaster story. You know, we'll see who has the best one.
Yeah, see, if you can do it in under 3 minutes, leave it on, you know, our message machine,
yeah.
And then we can play it on the air.
It'll be funny.
You could put dramatic side effects. Sound effects? Sound effects.
Side effects being moldy carpet.
Yeah, my side effect is I twitch whenever I hear the word. Yeah. So, we would like to hear some of them if you have some that you'd like to share. We'd like to hear them even if you don't want to share, but we would be unlikely to if you don't want to share. So there you go. Hopefully you have a very fishy week.
May the fish be with you.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Aquarimax Audio Show. For additional episodes, please visit aquarimax.com. For comments and or questions that may be featured on an upcoming podcast, leave a message at 801-477-0629 or email us at info@aquarimax.com.